Hello, and welcome to another great day at the Boundless Show. I am your host, Lisa Anderson, and Candace, welcome back.
Thanks, Lisa. I missed being here.
I know. I missed you, too, because guys, last couple weeks, but it was okay. It was doable.
I was trying to comment into the iPod as I was listening, and it just wasn't the same.
Give your 2 cents. Yeah. Oh, maybe we should start that as a feature, my retroactive
there
commentary.
The director's
cut. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of topics that are of interest to guys. Ted, I know you're a huge fan of Hannah Montana and that whole franchise. You have the dolls, right?
I'm watching an eBay auction right now.
Okay. But which, because she has the best of both worlds. So are we talking Hannah Montana or Miley Cyrus? Which doll is it?
I'm so ignorant. I have no clue.
I just put him on the spot. Sorry.
I know Miley is the...
The real
supposedly.
The girl, the...
And Hannah Montana is the
living life,
stage
the real world.
Singer.
And that's her persona where she can just break out and be a star.
Right.
And it's awesome.
Just like me.
My niece actually got the doll. She's almost three. And my mom, she got it for Christmas. She got one of the Barbies. And my mom went into a big lecture about it, about how kids her age shouldn't have these dolls because you press a button and she sings that song, Best of Both Worlds, which is the theme song, I guess, of the show or whatever. And at the time, I was kind of like, who cares? This is just a doll, whatever. She's prancing around in her little boots and stuff like that. But as we all know, yesterday, we heard about a little photo shoot with Miley Cyrus, and I know that we talk about bees in our bonnets around here, and I know that Mott has one as a result of this. So, Mott, why don't you just start in? Because I had to unleash some anger in the past couple weeks about eHarmony, so I don't want to be the only negative person on the panel, so I'll let Mott take this one.
Yeah, Lisa, I think what really bothers me is that her parents were there, and they're supposed to protect her. And here she is, she looks like she's nude, she may not have been, she looks like she's on a bed or wrapped in a sheet or whatever, but she's being sexualized at 15. And I don't understand the thinking of a father or a mother who would allow that at a photo shoot like this.
What troubled me, Mott, was the quote that I read. She said, well, you can't say no to Annie Leibovitz. She's a photographer. I mean, granted, she's shot some of the most, some of the biggest stars, but would you say no to the devil if he asked you to, you know, sell your soul? I mean, what kind of values do you teach your child?
Well, I think in the apology, you know, where she says, well, I felt comfortable. It was artistic. It's kind of a cop-out. It's almost like you can appear nude or be semi-nude as long as it's artistic.
Yeah. Well, it's like we've so lost the definition of what is art. What is beauty? I mean, true beauty glorifies God. To see a young girl really looking like a prostitute, or, you know, in that category with her bright red lips and her, and I mean, to see her, how thin she is, you can tell she's a child. She's 15.
Yeah.
And as the mother of a daughter, it's just shocking. And you're speechless because it's just so
Well, you're speechless
the pale.
Also because she's a confessing Christian.
Right.
And we just ran the article and plugged in.
Cover story
called So Far, So Good. Well, how appropriate is that?
Yeah.
Well,
it just does remind you that
her. Even
when there is a desire by somebody to play it straight, to recognize they've got fans looking up to them who are much younger, that there's still this pressure in our culture to sexualize people at such a young age, and which does require very active parents, very diligent parents, to try to protect them.
Yeah. Well, the article actually says from Adam Holtz, who, here's a line here, it says, so far, parental guidance has helped Miley dodge career-scuttling controversy. And the parents were responsible for this career-scuttling controversy.
Well, it reminds me, I mean, the question I have with it is just how, like we're saying, what does determine what you say no to and what's appropriate? I mean, it's just, to me, it's just bizarre that she's 15 years old. I mean, Annie, I think it is true that most people would not say no to Annie Leibovitz, you know, and they do. They compromise in many different ways because of who she is or what she obviously must know. It's the same thing they get on American Idol, where all these kids get kicked off because if they happen to say, well, I don't want to become this or I don't want to do this, well, you're going to have to become a certain thing in order to, quote unquote, make it. And yeah, I just think it's weird. I'm just like, you know, nothing of what she did in that pose, and we should say it appears in Vanity Fair is the actual magazine that it appears in. But I was just thinking to myself, a 15-year-old, what 15-year-old naturally sits around with a piece of, you know, pearl gray satin wrapped around her? It's just so unrealistic. Mm-hmm. And it's just so... Yeah.
Well,
it's just
what kind of culture has adults wanting... Vanity Fair is not a kid magazine. This isn't Teen Beat. This is a magazine.
What's the purpose
read...
of the art?
Mm-hmm. Right. It's, you know, it's to arouse the lust of old men. It's gross. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just disgusting.
And she comes out with an apology. She feels ashamed. But you know what? Billy Ray should feel ashamed. He's the one who allowed this. This is his young daughter. Mm-hmm. He should be coming out with the apology, not Hannah Montana. Well, I mean, it's good that she did, and it's good that she feels ashamed. But I'd like to hear from Billy Ray myself.
When you look at me, I do not deserve the love you've given me. I could not have earned for such a lowly man. You would come to earth and give up everything.
I started reading Slate in large part due to a couple of my friends who apparently keep up with it quite often. And I noticed that there's an article on there that came up, I think it was yesterday, or no, it was a couple days ago now, by Bonnie Goldstein. And the title of it is I Left My Son in San Francisco. And it's the story of how she basically enabled her son's entire high school career and then found herself having to send him off to college. And he did a stint in Wisconsin, which didn't work out. After one semester, he ended up with a 1.0 because he realized that he couldn't actually study on his own and couldn't really even exist on his own. And so he came back, and I think it's interesting. She actually starts off the article by saying that in his final year of high school, I impersonated him online, filling out and submitting 11 versions of the common application for undergraduate admission. The guidance counselor at his private school told parents such, quote, clerical support was expected, and it became my full-time job. And so her son goes off to college. He can't decide on a major, which most people can't anyway. That's fine. But anyway, in effect, he flunks out, comes back, and now she has just found herself launching him back to San Francisco to try again. And she closes the article. It's interesting. He goes back home to a garden party for his sister, who had a very successful year in school. She's significantly older than him. And he had to go around to everyone and explain to all the adults why he failed. And it was such a wake-up call for him to admit his own failure. Anyway, so now he's back in San Francisco and attempting to go at it with round two. So she's describing this. But I think it's an interesting... We've talked several times here about just the... how in the world, you know, do you make that bridge from you're at home, you're in high school, you are a dependent of your parents, and just the whole leaving the nest, and you all have done it. So who wants to jump in?
Well, I think the two issues here are the parents' good intentions and then also the recipient of those good intentions and how they handle those. And there was a great article in Psychology Today called A Nation of Wimps that's just recently been made into a book. And it said that we really have, ever since the child on board stickers started showing up on vehicles, there has been a renewed care and attention given to parenting that at times has been very excessive, especially when parents try to live out their own dreams through their kids, try to direct them, but especially when they try to child safety proof their entire life, where they try to keep them from avoiding any kind of disappointments or failure or risk. And that's what we're hearing is taking over into college. Yeah. Of school administrators are getting calls at 2 a.m. in the morning, parents complaining about their kids' grades, and even HR employees who are saying, we've got parents showing up for job interviews, parents who are trying to guide their kids through this. Obviously, something's wrong there. Yeah.
You know, from the article you read, it sounds like for the first time in his life, he was forced to deal with his own failure. Mm-hmm. Going around and explaining to people why he failed, and it's good that he's doing that now. But you know, parents need to put their children in a position for that much earlier to allow them to fail, to overcome failure. And this guy is getting a really late start to that.
You know, I don't want to be accused of being sexist, but I don't think we can have this conversation the way the media wants us to, which is to say all children are equally affected by this trend. I think boys are more negatively affected by this trend than girls are. Hmm. The fact that he has an older sister who's succeeding, I suspect, is not unique to their family. When you try to teach girls they can be anything they want to be, the feminist movement has really wanted to say, teach your girls to be more like boys. And in the process, it seems like the girls are displacing boys because you have so many more girls than boys in college, and that number seems to continue to go up. But that's just one of many anecdotal pieces of evidence. But I think that you say, girls, you can do anything. What you're really, the subtext to that is you can be like boys. And in the process, the girls become more masculine, and the standard of masculinity becomes more feminine. And I think the boys suffer.
Now, it is interesting. The same Psychology Today article was talking about some classic benchmarks of adulthood. And they've got stats here for both men and women. And they say that in 1960, 65% of males had reached those benchmarks of adulthood by the age of 30. Versus in 2000, only 31% had. But they say for women, 77% had met the benchmarks of adulthood by 30 in 1960. So it was more women back then. But by 2000, the number had fallen to 46%. So you do see both men and women struggling with this ability to be independent, to be self-sufficient.
Well, women are not by nature designed to be independent and self-sufficient. They're designed to be helpers. I mean, they're designed. So I'm not sure if I would even agree that those benchmarks are biblical benchmarks. I think about the effects on telling your kids you can't climb trees, you can't play in the mud, you can't do anything dangerous. Who does that hurt more? If girls by nature want to play house, dress up,
it
kitchen.
Hurts the boys.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not going to let your kids do anything that could lead to an emergency room visit, mm-hmm. I think ultimately that undermines the boy need to become a man more than it undermines the girl need to become a woman, mm-hmm. biblically understood.
Yeah.
Well, and my question is, you know, especially in light of this article, really, whose fault is it? I mean, is this because of the parents honestly thinking that their kids really need that extra help? Or is it because the parents are so fearful of feeling a void? I mean, this boy was the baby of the family. There was a gap between him and his sister. And it seems to me like the mom is saying, I need to hold on to you because will I lose my identity once you're out of the nest? And what does that look like? So how do you kind of fight that? Because I'm a little bit in that situation now where my mom is a widow. And I've noticed that, you know, she's much more, she and I joke about her living through me vicariously. And my entire life is now her life. And she just like wants updates on it all the time.
Yeah, Lisa, that reminds me of one of the quotes that I read in the Nation of Wimps article where this guy says, he's a college grad and he says, I wish my parents would stop making me their hobby. Mm-hmm. Like their whole lives revolved around him. And so they wanted to usher him through his childhood, his college career, without him making his own identity.
You know, I think there are a couple of trends that sort of converge to make this a reality. One is the divorce trend, just the sheer volume of families that are shattered by divorce. And so you have all these kids, by and large, having absent fathers. So if there's no model there for masculinity and rough and tumble boyness, the tendency is, yeah, to be more like your mom. That has to do with the feminization of the boys. But also, the fact that couples are waiting so much longer to have kids, then they may be only able to have one. Or if they have to pay upwards of $25,000, I saw this week that a surrogacy can cost as much as $100,000. If you start out with a baby that cost you $100,000 just to have, you're going to want to treat that like, you know, a very valuable piece of porcelain that you want to keep under glass and lock and key.
Well, and the parenting style that we see more often is a buddy relationship. It's a friendship relationship with kids. And that happens even more in homes where there's been divorce. A lot of times you don't have the same modeling structure. You have more of a friendship type relationship. And so another key piece of this is the fact that those friendships take over into college and into career. Mm-hmm. And they talk specifically about the cell phone.
Yeah.
That's the tether to parents that didn't occur maybe in another generation, but they said, you know, you on a typical college campus, as soon as class is out, the phones are flipping open and people are immediately giving their parents every detail. But this is probably the bigger issue. They're asking parents for help with every decision they make too.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where the bigger problem comes in.
And I think they sort of form this unhealthy intimacy with their parents in their college years and even into their 20s by sharing the details of their lives and not pursuing maybe even marriage because of the close relationship they have with their own parents.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to try to clarify here a little bit. We're obviously not against healthy parent-child relationship, especially with adult children. We know that, especially from our blog readers, we get plenty of comments from people who say, I just love my parents. We have a great relationship. We always have. And we're not downplaying that at all. I think most of us have had some of those opportunities and enjoyed that relationship. What the problem is if you're not able to move towards independence, where you're still in a dependent relationship with parents who should have launched you, who should have given you the ability to be independent.
Yeah, but, you know, it kind of goes back to what Candace was saying and how men and women are different, even on that, because I blogged recently on an Anthony Bradley article that talked about an unhealthy intimacy that a boy can have with his own mother. And how it can have this feminization effect on him, and that can last, I don't know, through college on into his 20s.
There's supposed to be a place at which a mom has to wrestle with the fact that her boy's got to go off and skin his knee,
yeah.
That he's got to be able to take on some risk and potentially fall flat on his face.
Yeah.
And I think there's been some very careful moms who've had great intentions of avoiding that with their child who don't realize mm-hmm. they need that.
Okay, so what are some of like the warning signs then, and how do we move people past this so they don't find themselves 35 and still calling their mom for every little decision as to, you know, what to order at the restaurant?
The one thing is the desire to be perfect, to maintain a perfect score. We've read articles about especially honor students who say, I'm not going to take a class that could potentially screw up my 4.0.
So avoiding something that's hard or risky.
So living in a certain bubble.
Risk averse.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Where you protect yourself from the chance of harm so that you can keep your score high.
Yeah, I think for a college student too, who's been parented like that and is anxious and is really tested and is maybe even depressed, I think that's another warning sign is coming into an environment that requires a lot of you and really not handling it well. And sort of going back and trying to understand why would be, I think, helpful.
You know, maybe a good challenge for our listeners is to pick up the Harris Brothers book, Do Hard Things. And if you bristle at that idea of doing hard things, to ask yourself why. And just to see their theology of hardness, you know, that life is supposed to be challenging. And that avoiding challenge is a sign of an unwillingness to become an adult.
Yeah.
Well, it's worth putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. I appreciate in the biographies of Winston Churchill and Teddy Roosevelt that they specifically went out and got themselves involved in a war because they felt like they had grown up so comfortable in lives of privilege that they needed to go put their neck on the line.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about that. I love the line in the article that says that entrepreneurs know that failure is a better proving ground for future success, and that instead of trying to live perfect lives, we need the opportunity to learn from our mistakes.
Yeah, and you know, in our pre-studio conversation, we were talking about if we thought that this hover parenting is responsible for all the fight clubs that are popping up around America. I think I just saw...
Or extreme sports.
Extreme sports, where these young boys or these young men, they really want to test themselves. They want to answer the question, am I man enough?
Do I have what it takes?
Do I have what it takes?
That's right.
You know, it's interesting how many readers, Boundless readers, will write in and say, my parents don't want me to do certain things. I've gotten two recently. One said, I'm of age and I want to have a marriage like my parents' marriage, a good marriage, and we have this wonderful family ministry, and I hope to marry a guy who can join our ministry, but my parents are praying that I won't get married, that I'll just stay single. And it's this whole weirdness of wanting to keep your adult children children.
Well, Candace mentioned the book, Do Hard Things, which is by the Harris Brothers, who will be on the podcast at some point in the future, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you can get the book by going to boundless.org and accessing our resource center through there. So pick up a copy and maybe start doing some hard things and let us know how it's going. Of course, write to us at editor@boundless.org and tell us about your own journey and about your own maybe cutting off some of the cell phone calls to mom and dad and the challenge that may take and having to, you know, whatever, choose your own dish towels, I guess, without their help. So maybe that'll be helpful. So we'll get into that a little bit more when we have the Harris Brothers here.
We will not let it go. We will not let this win. Come. jaded innocence. Yet something burns in me to reverse this dying trend.
For this week's culture segment, back in the studio with me, I have Bob Walaszewski of Plugged In and Plugged In Online right here at Focus on the Family. How are you doing today, Bob?
Good, Lisa. It is great to be back on your program.
Well, I know it is. No, just kidding. You know, it's one of those things where you're going to have to start making decisions.
Uh-oh.
Know, whether or not it's, you know, do you talk to CNN or do you talk to The Boundless Show?
It's that's no decision.
It's not even a contest.
That's a no-brainer. I will be here. I will be here in Studio A.
Because we are speaking to the people and the people that are interested in what is going on. So we're going to have you give a little roundup for this weekend, because as we all know, The Boundless Show heads into the weekend. We release our episodes each Friday. So we're going to just launch right in and start talking about a couple things. The first being, and I'm so concerned that we even have to talk about this because it's just ridiculous, is the release of Grand Theft Auto 4. Which, no, I did not go out and purchase, and I have not yet played. But let's talk about how you and your team did, okay? So I'm just going to rebuke you for that, but we're going to say that it's in the spirit of having to review it for other people. So
yes, and you feel bad when you actually go purchase it on behalf of Focus on the Family, realizing that the money that we spend goes to their bottom line. Anyways, I guess it's no secret that we have never been a fan of any of the Grand Theft Auto, the three to date. Certainly, again, with four, we're not. Once again, you can solicit prostitutes. You can kill policemen. You can drive drunk. And yet what's interesting to me, we have an online poll on our website at pluggedinonline.com. We ask the question and say, do you plan on buying or renting Grand Theft Auto 4, and these are people that come to us, that believe in what we do, that read our reviews, etc., and 15% of our readers said they do. So I know that we're speaking right now to somebody who's like, yeah, I really don't see much of a problem with it. And
okay, what is the allure? What? Why is that? Why do you think that
you
is?
You know, maybe there's something about putting yourself, again, you're not watching this. You're actually putting yourself in the role of an inner city thug faced with these choices. This time around, there's more of a moral conscience, but I use that term very loosely. I mean, there's some consequences a little bit more so than what we've seen in the past. But again, you know, the idea that I can go run over pedestrians and, wow, I'm doing well in this game. I don't even like the idea of a game where you can make that type of choice and in some cases be rewarded for it in game playing. It just doesn't make any sense to me. 7% of our online poll said that they were buying the game on Tuesday, the day that the game came out. Again, so it happens. We know it's out there. I'm not trying to judge people, but I do want to just appeal for people to use good old common sense and say, you know, again, if you put it to the WWJD question, what would Jesus do? You know, I have to think that if Jesus and his 12 disciples were walking the planet today and Thomas or Matthew, you know, John came and said, hey, can we play this game? Not that they would, but what would the answer be from our Savior?
Yeah. Well, and I think it was Steve Waters who was saying yesterday that, you know, that there are actually guys, this isn't just 12-year-olds that are standing in line. I mean, these are 20, 30-year-old guys, apparently, that we've seen here in town standing in line at 12:01 a.m. to purchase
right
this
right after midnight
thing.
When it became available.
Yeah, I mean, whatever, you know, standing there. And, I think they need to be standing in line for marriage licenses and standing in line
counseling.
counseling.
You buy Grand Theft Auto 4 and then you go to our counselor who's down.
They need to be at the Christian bookstore buying Bibles to hand out to their neighbors. I'm just going to put it out there.
Yes.
And, you know,
women, I know we totally
if you're in line
agree.
Buying this,
we
I just
totally
have
agree.
Problems with you too. So, all right, well, let's move into the realm of movies.
Okay.
Talk to us about this weekend, first of all.
And this weekend, the number one film is, and I predict, and I know I'll be right on this, will be Iron Man.
Okay.
It's going to be huge. We've had Batman. We've had Superman. We've had Spider-Man. We've had the Hulk. We've had Daredevil. And now from the comic book pages comes Iron Man. By the way, a lot in this movie that I really, really liked. He's a playboy billionaire. He builds this suit. He saves himself. He saves the world, or potentially. And there's a redemption of his character in the process. He comes to believe that he's a munitions manufacturer, that what he's been doing has probably been contributing to the deaths of a lot of people. He goes through some remorse. He wants to change. There's a lot I like about it. Unfortunately, there was a few, and it didn't even need it. There, as a playboy, they showed him in bed with a quick fling with this gal, and although not quite, I wouldn't call it explicit. I mean, the show her in the with her bare back, the sheets barely covering part of her back, and the next morning, it's like
not to
yeah,
be confused with
that.
Miley Cyrus, who also had
who
her
did
back,
some of the same, you know,
other issue.
Hopefully, okay. She's learning the consequences. I'm not so sure that this wasn't necessary, and just a small bit of language that was a disappointment. This movie was so close, where I'm giving it a 2.5 out of 5 for family friendliness for the radio feature. I could have almost given it a 4 had they throttled back a little bit of language in that one scene that I described. Because basically what you're left with was some violence that I would have warned about to some degree, which for most of our listeners is not the major issue, because this was not really gross test violence. It's just shoot 'em up action, almost sometimes looking like a Western scene. Number one last week, by the way, and it probably will do well again, is the movie Baby Mama, Tina Fey, Saturday mm-hmm. Night Live star.
She's had great success as a writer, having written Mean Girls and screenplays.
And she does pretty well as an actress, you know, mm-hmm. very believable. The movie has a lot to say. Again, what I liked about the movie was it says that having children is something to be esteemed. Mm-hmm. Gone is now the feminism role of the 60s and early 70s that said, career only, no children, I'll do what I want. So for her, the biological clock is ticking. She's tried to have children. She can't through in vitro. And so she finally hires a surrogate. And that's where the humor, quote unquote, comes from, she's called white trash in the movie, moves in with her because her boyfriend kicks her out and the sparks are flying. Anyways, that's the part of the movie that I like, the fact that it values motherhood and it values having children. However, the part of it, and it's a not too much of a jump to get there, that I didn't like is that you never really get the idea that she's interested in having a baby for the baby's sake. It's almost, I want to have the baby for my sake. Mm-hmm. And more egregious to me was the fact that marriage played no role in her mind as far as having this child. Mm-hmm. She's a single woman. She's a very, very wealthy woman, and it costs $100,000. She doesn't bat an eye. You know, mm-hmm. I can afford it. She drives, you know, wears mm-hmm. the top of the line, drives the top of the line Audi. And just one thing to check off in her checkbook is something that she wants to do and pay for.
No real need for a father.
There does turn to be a love interest in the movie, but again, as we see so often with Hollywood, it's in the sack first, and then we'll try to see if we might be able to have a relationship mm-hmm. second, you know. So
what we need to do is hook her up with the guys who are in line for Grand Theft Auto. Somehow they're missing one another.
And by the way, a lot of
matches are not being made. So, all right. Well, as we round it out here, give us a couple, just give us a quick update on Expelled. What do you think's happening with that?
It was number 13 last week. Mm-hmm. It was number 10 the week before. It's now made $5.5 million. Respectable, mm-hmm. not outstanding. But my guess is it's only going to be in the theaters possibly probably another week, maybe in, depending on what part of the country, maybe a couple weeks in more conservative sections. It may even be 3 weeks kind of thing. But I'm thinking maybe one more week. This is a time that people need to fish or cut bait on this one. If they're thinking of going and going, I'm going to go. They probably ought to go this weekend. And of course, they know that I love this film and highly, highly recommend it. It's one of the bright spots in the theater right now. Mm-hmm. Nim's Island, Horton Hears a Who, Forbidden Kingdom has some possibilities. I didn't really enjoy the movie, but it wasn't that egregious. Mm-hmm. But Expelled, I enjoyed it, and it was a great film.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, good. And obviously, catch that if you haven't caught it already, over some of the trash, like the Harold and Kumar and some of the other stuff that's out, which...
Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which is good just to forget.
Forget Sarah Marshall altogether.
But the sex jokes, the drug jokes, I mean, Harold and Kumar, this is Cheech and Chong on steroids. But the sad part, it was the number two film last week at the movie theater. And I don't even know why a reputable company would even allow that to be filmed and feel proud that it was under their list of films. It's just garbage from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess, I think people are idiots. So that's my editorial of the situation. So, well, good. Well, we're obviously going to have you back in the studio as we head into the summer blockbuster series. And, we're going to be coming up on Prince Caspian. There's going to be a lot of
other
stuff.
The new Indiana Jones film. We have Speed Racer. And we'll talk
goodness.
A little bit how
Harrison Ford
Iron
still
Man
alive
did.
For crying out loud?
He's not quite the action figure as he was in his earlier ones. It's his son that does a lot of the heavy lifting in the next
and
one.
And he's just the oracle that tells him. That's excellent. So, well, it's always great to have you, Bob.
Okay,
thank
Lisa,
you
good.
So much for being here, and we'll see you next time.
Okay, until next time.
All I've held on here is the anchor of my fear. Strength to let this go.
Do nice guys always finish last? In this week's edition of The Hungry Years, Kara Schwab tells us what she thinks about it. And she says it in a very nice way.
We've all heard it said before that nice guys finish last. Well, I've been thinking about that, and I'm not sure I totally get it. Now, perhaps many of you nice guys out there listening are starting to fidget and beginning to get a little defensive, but stay with me here. I happen to be a single fish swimming in the dating pool, and honestly, I'm attracted to nice guys. And so are most of the other single female fish I know. What we're not attracted to, however, are those woe-is-me nice guys who've got a big old negative chip on their shoulders and are cranky and complaining that they're always finishing last. The nice guys I'm attracted to don't tout the fact that they're nice at all, or even dwell on it. They're just confident in who they are and enjoy treating a woman right. They don't put a name tag on each morning that says, "Hello, my name is Mr. Nice Guy." Come on, you wear something like that and you're just asking for disrespect. You may as well wear a sign on your back that says, "Kick me." And then if you do have a girlfriend, she'll have to wear a shirt with an arrow pointing to you that says, "I'm with stupid." So I wonder about this meaning of finishing last. To all you nice guys out there, does finishing last mean that you didn't get a shallow babe who likes to be treated poorly by a bad boy? Oh, you poor thing. That is a devastating loss. Just think how much richer your life would be if you could only have a superficial woman who didn't appreciate the real you. To be honest, these days what I'm attracted to most is a nice guy who finishes what he starts. He can finish last or first or somewhere in the middle of the pack, but a guy who follows through and does what he says he's going to do is so attractive to me. For example, I've been toying around with a cool idea for an animated screenplay. I was discussing this with a man I dated recently, and he asked me what my plan was to write it. And I remember saying, "Well, what do you mean, plan?" And he said, "How do you plan on accomplishing it? Are you thinking about writing 1 hour a night or reserving one weekend day to write? How do you plan on finishing it?" And I answered, "Sheesh, I never thought about finishing it. I just like to talk about starting it." Well, he mentioned he could work up a little grid for me in Excel to help me come up with a game plan to get her done. Now, perhaps this isn't normal, but a man with a spreadsheet makes me swoon. He had me at grid. It seems lately all I do is start things I don't finish. So a man who can make a commitment to finish something is someone I'm totally drawn to. And then there's those men who like to finish well. I met one who I really admire. He's a cyclist and recently finished a 3-day cycling trip where he and a group of friends rode 50-plus miles from Fort Collins to Estes Park, Colorado. The next day, they had an 84-mile bike ride planned, and just before he finished those miles, he and a friend decided to challenge themselves to go the extra mile, 16 of them, in fact, and mostly uphill, and that made their course an even 100 so they could say they completed a century ride. Talk about finishing well. I also love how the message interprets the meaning of Jesus being the author and finisher of our faith. In Hebrews 12, verses 2 and 3, the message writes, "Keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race we're in. Study how he did it, because he never lost sight of where he was headed. That exhilarating finish in and with God, he could put up with anything along the way, cross, shame, whatever. And now he's there in the place of honor right alongside God. When you find yourselves flagging in your faith, go over that story again, item by item, that long litany of hostility he plowed through. That will shoot adrenaline into your souls. As a believer, when you make a plan to finish well, you'll receive an eternal reward. As a nice guy who takes on a challenge and sees it through to the end, you'll earn a woman's respect. It doesn't matter if you finish first or last. When you have the courage, strength, ambition, and willpower to fight to the end, win or lose, a woman can't help but take notice. Now, isn't that nice?"
Opening today's Boundless Inbox, we have a question for Candace, and this question is from, we'll just call her R. And she's saying that her question is about when we notice red flags in others' relationships. And here she begins. "Last year, when a friend talked to me about a relationship, I saw red flags all over the place. Not sure if the relationship ended in marriage, but there was a wedding planned, so it's very likely they could have been married. Well, just today, a detective called and emailed me about the situation. My friend, though she has been seen, is out of contact. Apparently the man's a liar, and it's possible that my friend might be in a manipulative situation. I'm not sure of all the details. Although this may be an unusual case, there are times when the flags may seem very subtly red or pinkish, then flaming red in other friends' approaches to the guy-girl thing. For example, a willingness to be with a non-Christian or an extremely subtle potential openness toward that direction." What kind of advice do you have for our red flags?
Well, R of the red flags, I don't want the extreme nature of the friend who's maybe married to a psycho who's got the detective out looking for her to make all the listeners think this question is really irrelevant to them. Because I do think a lot of us have friends who end up dating someone and we just kind of get that weird feeling like maybe this isn't a great match. And the tendency is to feel like, but it's not really my place to say anything. And so this calls into question our understanding of being in Christian community. And I think it shows the deficiency of our communities that we live in. We should be able to have a heart-to-heart conversation in an appropriate setting. You know, you don't want to do it publicly. You don't want to have an embarrassing situation come out of it. You really need to be sensitive. But you should be able to, with a close friend, at a minimum, ask questions that would help her think through or help him think through what their goals are for the relationship and where it's heading. This does raise the issue of, again, the sensitivity of these situations, because you're going to have two people who are emotionally attached. They're not going to probably be interested in hearing your concerns. I know at points when I was dating, I didn't want to hear that somebody had doubts. I wanted to hear that they were excited for me. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, if you're ever in a situation where you start to think maybe this isn't a healthy relationship, the first thing you need to do is pray and ask the Lord to give you wisdom and ask the Holy Spirit to create an opportunity where you can say something, because the last thing you want to do is be silent, and then they get married, and then they're coming to you for advice and saying, what do I do? It's a horrible situation, and you're in a position of having to say something, and you're going to be kicking yourself thinking, I should have said something before this was permanent and lifelong. And so don't be silent if you see a red flag, especially if it's something like a Christian dating a non-believer, or if you are concerned that there may be abuse in the situation, whether it's alcohol abuse, drug abuse, or physical abuse. If you see a relationship that's headed for disaster, by all means, pray for an opportunity to say something before they get married, because afterwards, the consequences are just exponentially worse.
I think with several of my friends, this has come into play just because we've dated various folks, and especially when you don't know the person that they've started dating, and it's not someone who's in within your circle of acquaintance, so then you have to invest the time and energy in getting to know that person, and it really is entering into that relationship with them, I guess, and in kind of experiencing it. And what I found helpful is immediately encouraging them to start getting godly counsel from a pastor, because I felt that many of my friends have come to me and all of a sudden I'm burdened with all these questions and all these responsibilities, and I can't take on that role for everyone. And so I think that's a good thing for folks to do as well, is to immediately get the ear of a pastor who will then acquaint himself with that man or woman in that situation. And but it's tough. I mean, I've had to step up several times and say, whether it's a question of this person just outright isn't a believer, like right. you said, or if it's me just saying, I'm not sure that I really want this to be your story, or I'm not sure that I want, you know, or just feeling like it's not a good fit.
Well, and getting the pastor involved can help check you to make sure you're not just jealous that your best friend is now no longer available to meet with you all the time. Or if your friend is really reluctant to meet with a pastor or a mentor of some sort, then you can really push back and say, okay, why are you not willing to get the counsel of believers? That not an an unwillingness or a closed offness to wise counsel. Then I think you can say, okay, this to me says there's a problem here. What, you know, what's really going on? And if it really is a good friendship, your friend should be willing to listen to you. Or at some point, I think you're planting seeds that you can then pray that God will water and, you know, bring back to bring good fruit out of that.
Right. And I think it helps you winnow between the difference of, as we talked about previously, someone just saying, well, you shouldn't settle for this or that. I have this idea, this list in mind for you, and I think you need to hold out for that versus, no, for real, this is a very serious concern and you're going to have to bring it up. So thank you, Candace, for addressing this. And I think that's good, and I think that everyone will benefit from hearing from that. So that's it for this week's edition of The Boundless Inbox. Of course, we will always be willing to take your questions and your comments. Please write to us at editor@boundless.org. We want to hear from you, and we just want folks to start shaking it up and sending in questions for us, things that you're dealing with, questions that you're asking of your friends. Maybe you've had an experience similar to this, or maybe something that you just have not seen or heard addressed on The Boundless Show yet. So please write to us, and we will hopefully get it into a future episode. Until then, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Have a super week as we head into spring here. Hopefully it's sunny and warm where you are, because it is here. Come visit us, too.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.